When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor, visiting with Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations, who's guiding us through the points of view of the capitals involved in the war in Europe. That's the Ukraine front. There is a war in the Middle East at the same time. I bring that up because the President of the United States very matter-of-factly and convincingly pledges the full support of the U.S. to its ally Israel. At the same time, the support to Ukraine, which had been adamant these many months, is now in question. Why? Because members of Congress have brought doubt to whether the war has a visible conclusion, whether the war is a national interest. And that meant that the most recent request by the administration for additional monies for Ukraine has been either denied or set aside. That is the present argument in Congress. We're going to, what does Keefe make of this? Because any doubts in U.S. are echoed in doubts in European capitals, Slovakia, Poland, Germany. The list is growing about countries who want to know how long and why and what the conditions of victory are, and when do we get to rebuild what's left of Ukraine. Professor Keefe's point of view, as far as I can tell, in Mr. Zelensky's most recent visit to New York and Washington, and also to Ottawa, Keefe's point of view remains the maximalist position, which is we will drive the Russians out of Donbass, we will recapture Ukraine. What is Keefe's point of view, given the doubts that I've just touched upon? Thank you.
Thank you. I think that you have stated it. What Keefe wants is a return to the internationally recognized, including by Russia, the internationally recognized boundaries of Ukraine. And I think we must all recognize that if Keefe is unsuccessful in turning back, pushing back Russian aggression, and forced to allow Russia to control more of Ukraine, even than she did after 2014, that will be a signal of great disarray and weakness in the West. It will be a green light, not just for Russia, but for other states that may wish to test the international credibility and will of what's called the West, which includes, of course, South Korea, Japan, Taiwan, various other lot of states. In other words, the West is now it's no longer a geographical term. It just means the countries that essentially support the international order, in which the Russia and China do not participate. Now, if the United States starts reducing or ends its support for Ukraine, that might seem unthinkable, but of course, that was what we did in Vietnam, where there were fewer players, there were fewer states supporting Vietnam. Mr. Biden was actually, as a senator, was one of the key figures who prevented President Ford from taking action when North Vietnam violated the treaty that had been concluded a year, I guess it was concluded in 1972 or 73. And we had made many, many guarantees. I think that what we saw then was something that had been clear in World War I and World War II, which is the great unwillingness of the United States, of our population, to get involved in wars. So that we are not by nature an imperial country. We don't seek domination. We don't. War is not the health of the state for us. The military industry and the military complex and so forth, it has enriched certain people, such as the late husband of the late Senator Dianne Feinstein. There are people who have become very, very rich through American military spending. But this has always been against the grain. The Democrats are opposed to military spending. They really always have been, although they have presided over wars. And I think the Republican instinct is much more the conservative Robert Taft kind of approach to staying out of trouble. And it's not the so-called neoconservative approach which spurred so much intervention. But here's the point with respect to Ukraine. Withdrawing support from Ukraine is not going to lead to a resolution of the conflict there. This conflict has existed on one level or another for at least 100 years, really since it's almost 200. It's about 150 years since the real Russianization of Ukraine, which had been part of the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth, not part of the Russian Empire. Ukraine has been in play and been a volatile quantity since the time of the overthrow or the collapse of the Russian Empire, when for a while Ukraine escaped but was reconquered, but Poland was not. This was Poland and Ukraine worked together very closely. In World War II, Ukraine was again, it was not wholeheartedly on the Soviet side. Ukraine is a distinct nationality, however we define a nationality. They have their own language. And now, after this battle, they certainly have an identity, and part of it is we're not part of Russia. But unless we terminate this war and create a stable peace, all that's going to happen is it's going to be like the Middle East, where you had a big war in 67, you had a big war in 73, and now you've got another war coming. And in none of these has there been any effective war termination. After 67, the Israelis were in a position which they accepted of being a kind of hegemon. It would have been much wiser if they had sought to make a peace that would endure, even at the cost of certain ambitions. I mean, we, the United States, after all, after the Civil War, we accepted that Canada was never going to be part of the United States. We get along quite well with Canada, and it would have been a terrible mistake to get involved there. Some countries that are near Ukraine are going to be very, very troubled if Russia succeeds. I would say that the Poles, the Czechs, the Swedes, various others, the Finns, they're not the Baltic countries. They're not going to be happy at all. And I think Turkey is going to be wrong-footed, because Turkey is trying to find some kind of a redefine her geopolitical role. And having Russia, to have Russia on the whole northern littoral of the Black Sea would be a tremendous setback for Turkey. So the problem is going to continue, and it will continue, of course, if it's not solved now. So it is imperative that, or it's not imperative, it's highly desirable for the future peace of the world that we don't, that, that, that Ukraine somehow is brought out of this terrible conflict intact, that Russia agrees that she is not going to try to take Ukraine, and that we can go back, or we can go forward to a situation where the two states coexist.
The comments in the Congress, however, resonate in Europe. The doubts in Slovakia are now voiced out loud with the new election. The doubts in Poland have to do with bad feelings between Warsaw and Kyiv. The doubts in Germany are based on economic concerns. What are we doing? What's the game here? How far are we going with this? We need energy. We're a manufacturing hub. I don't know that Kyiv's listening to that, but now with the war in the Middle East, it is credible for the first few days at least, depending on where we are in a month, that Kyiv is going to be second fiddle. Do you measure that, Professor?
Well, I think that this is true. I think of the Winter War, when even though the Nazis were an overwhelming threat and Russia was dangerous and all that, there was a tremendous emotional desire in the West to help the Finns, but we didn't. Now, in the case of Ukraine, I think we've seen that there is a kind of a reflex. Actually, it's a very the desire to maintain a state that is internationally recognized intact and to stop just a crude invasion is highly laudable, and indeed success in doing that is fundamental to maintaining international order, just as locked doors are fundamental to keeping our houses from being violated and robbed, and a proper punishment of criminals, guilty criminals, is essential to maintaining peace and security for the population. The international order is not going to be safe if wolves are permitted to attack countries that they think are going to make a good and easy meal. So, but I think what you say is right. And part of this is the tremendous power of public opinion in the United States. And in the case of Germany, the Germans, seems to me, they're just baffling. They still don't understand where they are. They're a few hundred miles away from a very hot and dangerous war. If this war expands, it will directly threaten Germany, and even without expanding, failure to deal with Russia is going to be very difficult for Germany. I think Germany manifests the really tragic loss of willingness to defend themselves that we have seen in Europe since NATO and since the United States assumed the role of guarantor and protector of European security. We should never have done that in an unlimited way. It should have been for as long as it took for the European powers to get themselves in a condition to defend themselves. And we certainly should have no forces in Europe now, except attachés. We should have no obligations except alliances. But what we're showing, what I'm afraid is happening now, is that the worst scenario that I can see, or that I'm going to talk about, is that Vietnam, the catastrophic failure of the United States in Vietnam, which was very destructive. It cost as many Vietnamese as the Germans killed French in World War I. It was very, very bloody, and it was one of the reasons it was bloody was that we were supporting the South Vietnamese. I think their strategy and all sorts of things, that this could have been successful. It could have been successful in a relatively short time, but we were, by 1962-63, we were very much on the wrong road there. We're going to see what turns out to be a spoiling operation by the United States. Having said that, though, I'd like to make two points. One is that that the United States or the alliance to support Ukraine has not involved any direct conflict. So even when we started supplying and making Ukraine dependent on us, making victory in a sense conditional or seemingly conditional on lots outside support, we had kept it at a distance. And as I said, I think our initial idea was that we were never going to have to do anything. And as it became clear, this is point two, as it became clear that this was going to be a real war and it's going to be decided on the battlefield, we failed to take that aboard. And we failed to understand that our most pressing interest was to terminate the war by victory as fast as possible. That, to coin a phrase, there's no substitute for victory. By this, I mean the victory should be that Ukraine should return to her internationally recognized boundaries. But what we now have is a muddle about what the goals are, and we also have a muddle about what we're committed to. Now, this fits in with our split screen, because if the president says that we are rock solid for Israel, if I were in Jerusalem or in the Israeli government, I'd be very nervous, because the danger in the Middle East is that we're going to get over involved for a lot of reasons. It's a great mistake to forget about the very deep issues associated with Israel and her neighbors that will only be resolved by being resolved. They cannot be resolved by military hegemony. But certainly the Israelis don't quite, or some Israelis don't understand that. Others do very, very well. And we don't understand it. And the instinct in all of the Western countries, they've all lined up. It's like a tropism. They say that Israel has the right of self-defense. Well, what about the people whose territory is now a territory which the world has not recognized as being part of Israel? The violence is originating in those areas. That's where the grievance is coming from. The grievance is coming from the disappearance of any Palestinian state after 1948, and from the failure of the rest of the world to insist that this all be straightened out, that somehow the two sides come to terms with each other, something that they're incapable of doing unaided.
Speaking to Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations, we're looking at a split screen. We're looking at a split screen war, two wars going on simultaneously. We turn now to the European Union, which will have much to say about the Middle East, but at the same time is now fragmenting about Ukraine. Maybe that's too strong a word. There's dissent in the European Union as well as NATO. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.
Hey, it's Boxer.
And I'm Sarah Towns with Experience Columbus.
Did you know Columbus is home to the number one science museum in the country?
Ranked number 7 on Food & Wine's list of America's next great food cities.
And one of Condé Nast Traveler's top 10 best big cities in America.
Yes, Columbus. An Experience Columbus podcast keeps you in the know about what's happening in the Arch City.
Binge, listen to all the current episodes.
Or catch up on all things Columbus and discover what makes this city so special.
By the end, you'll be asking yourself, can all of this really exist in one city?
Yes, Columbus.
Ah, greetings from my bath, festive friends. The holidays are overwhelming, but I'm tackling this season with PayPal and making the most of my money, getting 5% cash back when I pay in 4. No fees, no interest. I used it to get this portable spa with jets. Now the bubbles can cling to my sculpted but pruny body. Make the most of your money this holiday with PayPal. Save the offer in the app.
Ends 12/31. See paypal.com/promo terms. Points can be redeemed for cash and more. Pay in 4 subject to terms and approval. PayPal Inc. and MLS 910457.
Love the night? Reach for Zen After Dark, a limited cocktail-inspired series for those who get up when the sun goes down. Try Zen's Mojito, Spiced Cider, and Espresso Martini nicotine pouches. Find them at select retailers. Available while supplies last. Zen After Dark. Bring on the night. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.